listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Oh, you're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Remember, you can send me a text, 2057, email me inbox at realitycheck.radio. We're always very blessed with our guests, and we're particularly blessed to have a fellow host of RCR, Dewa De Borg. Good morning, Dewa.
And good morning, Rodney. It is a privilege to be here talking with you again. It's been many, many years since I've spoken with you. In fact, you were still the leader of the ACT Party the last time I spoke with you in person, and I was just a teenager, just a little boy. It's amazing that we are in, you know, our paths have crossed once again.
It's wonderful. And back then I was an atheist, and now I'm a Christian. So your father had a big impact on me because he was such a wonderful man. Oh, is a wonderful man.
He is, yes. He's doing very well, and he'll be very happy to hear that.
And yeah, no, I have such huge respect. Tell me the name, Dewa De Borg. Where does that come from?
It's a Dutch name, and particular Dewa is a Frisian name. So Frisia is like one of the northern provinces the Netherlands. And the Frisian people are split between Germany and the Netherlands. So, but they've got their own language, and it actually has the same root as English. So the Frisia, Anglo-Frisian language tree. So Old Frisian and Old English are actually almost identical, but Modern English and Modern Frisian are very different. So Dewa is a very foreign name to the English speaker, even though it's technically more English than most Dutch names should be.
And the Frisians identify very strongly as Frisians, right, if I'm correct?
Yes, they do. They've got a very strong identity, but they're like the Dutch Frisians identify primarily as Dutch and then okay. Frisian. And yeah. I think the German Frisians, you know, as German and then Frisian. So they're not, okay. Not independently minded in the sense that they want to be separated from the country that they live in, but they've got very strong provincial ties. They have their own local government there. They're able to teach their own language and culture in their own schools and so on. So they're very proud of that.
And you came to New Zealand via South Africa.
No, I didn't come via South Africa at all. My parents came here from the Netherlands in 2002.
Oh, I did not know that. I always thought you were South African. Why would I think that?
It's a very common thing that I get. I think in particular, the last name, De Boer, comes from, the Dutch who moved to South Africa were known as the Boers, the farmers. And so you still have that today. The South Africans are known as Boers. And I think a lot of people make that connection with South Africa and the Netherlands, even though I've never been there. It's a very common Dutch last name.
Well, my next point was going to be that you're white, you're male, you're Christian, and you're named Dewa De Borg. You're like the wrong everything.
That's right. I lean into that as much as I can. You have to embrace it now these days.
Well, I love, because I was the leader of the ACT Party, I love supporting minority causes. And part of the attraction of being Christian is that you're in a minority, which I actually adore. Now, what we're going to discuss, Dewa, is you're going to explain to me what it is to be a conservative, because it's a fuzzy thing. You know, you can understand being a socialist, you can understand being a communist, you can understand being a libertarian and a free market nut. But what is conservatism?
Oh, that's a very detailed, very deep question that might take hours to answer, but we'll have to do a very short summary of that.
Do it conservatively.
Yeah, exactly. I remember one of the last times that I met with you, you were in the ACT Party, you were a classical liberal, and you were saying, you're great. I think you said to my father, you're great. It's really great, but you should really not be a conservative. You should become a classical liberal. So it's great now to have this swap the other way around that you're asking me about being conservative. I really enjoy that.
So, Friedrich Hayek was funny because he wrote a piece which affected me deeply, which is why I'm not a conservative. And his argument there was that government had got so off track that it needed radical reform to fix. And so he couldn't see how you could be a conservative. But of course, a classical liberal historically was a conservative because we lived with a classical liberal government. But where you go, you tell me what.
Well, that's right. I think in terms of just the word itself means to sort of to keep what you have in a way. And so if you have bad things, you don't really want to be a conservative. You don't want to conserve those bad things. But conservatism is more about, of course, the good things that we have and the good things that we had that we tried to conserve. And so as a conservative, I think the first thing that's important to know is that people live their life as conservative. So it's a way of life. It's perhaps the best way to really sum it up. And it's a way of being in touch with your traditions, with your heritage, being well connected with your family, your religion, your country. That to me is really the core element of conservatism, as opposed to, I guess, liberalism, which tends to disconnect people from those roots, tends to focus on the individual. And I think conservatism is more about grounding the individual in a larger community, in a larger way of life.
It's this interesting thing that it has a humility around intellectualism and reason. So it's that idea that you respect traditions that have been with us a long time because the fact that they have been with us a long time has to mean something. And you can't come along as a fresh generation and say, we'll get rid of that, we'll get rid of that, we don't like that, and we'll make society anew. And that we will dream up a new society in our heads and on paper, and we'll apply modern theory, and we'll come up with this new way of doing things. But to a conservative, I think, you look at the world and you say, hang on, this thing has been with us for thousands of years. Be careful.
Yes, and that's G.K. Chesterton who called it the fences, and we refer to them as Chesterton's fences, and people are tearing down these fences. And he always says, you know, people, you need to know what these fences are, you need to know why these fences are here, and sometimes people forget why there's a fence around a certain area, and they shouldn't remove those fences. And that idea actually comes from the Bible. The book of Proverbs actually has a proverb about not removing the landmarks from your ancestors. And that's sort of, I guess, like you don't understand why those fences are there, why those landmarks are there, but they place them there for a reason. And only once people remove them, once people tear down those fences, do we realize exactly what they were keeping out.
I have a horrific memory that has stayed with me. And I was a postgraduate student. I was in the University of Canterbury library, and I was standing there chatting, because the two of us would rather chat than work, to a fellow student. And for some reason, he and I were discussing marriage, not to marry each other, but the concept of marriage. And we both quickly agree that marriage was redundant and that there was now no need for marriage. And there's no need for marriage because this amazing thing called science and technology had produced the birth control pill. And so we could safely have relationships outside marriage without the burden of and responsibility of children. And we sat there, or stood there, seriously, 20 years old or whatever, thinking that we could say we don't need marriage, we're so clever, and throw away thousands of years of history, every experience of every successful culture, because we were so clever and we were at university. That's the opposite of conservatism, isn't it?
Absolutely. That is the complete opposite. And it's very sad to see how many people have swallowed that. And you've come around now, being a little bit older and wiser. But I think there are many people who haven't. And you can often see people who have gotten to an older age and they've thought they'd thrown away all the things they didn't need. And now they're alone and they're sad and they're bitter and, you know, they've realized they have no meaning to their life. and realized too late that they threw away the fundamental things to life.
Do you think they realize that?
Some of them do, but I think, unfortunately, many of them don't. I think they it's perhaps too difficult to make that connection once you've it would be too painful to have to face the truth, I think, for some people.
Because what I came to realize, by the way, I should say, I came to view marriage as important not long thereafter. So I didn't even when I was an atheist, I still believed, I was very much on the conservative side. That's why you and me and your father got along. Because I realized that our brains and our thinking can't comprehend everything. And just because we can't see a reason for marriage doesn't mean that there isn't one, which is the essence of conservatism. So I came to realize that in my 20s, late 20s. And so I valued, you know, those institutions, but I didn't value them as God-given.
And that's really the difference, I think, when, at least in my own experience, having grown up, realizing that marriage is something instituted by God, something that he has made for us and for our lives. I really went into life with the focus that I wanted to get married, I wanted to have my own family. I had a very good experience, you know, growing up with my family, my parents and my extended family, and saw all their happy marriages for the most part. And so I got married quite young, actually. I got married when I was 19 and just got on with life, and I've been very, very happy for the past decade.
I bet you have. I absolutely bet you have. Because looking back on a life, that is a recipe for joy. That not joy in the sense of excitement or ecstasy or fun, but of that joy of a life well lived.
I definitely have that feeling. I mean, I haven't got that far through life yet. You could say I'm still only 29 now, but I look back at the last 10 years and even, you know, the years earlier beyond that, and I'm just, yeah, very, very happy, very fulfilled, knowing that all of these things that I wanted to accomplish, I have for a large part already accomplished, and yet there's still so much more to come.
You would have to find a wife who was Christian.
Yes, and I went to a Christian school here in Manukau, Tyndale Park Christian School, and she was in my class, or sort of the class above me, actually, and we got married shortly after finishing school.
And children came thereafter?
Yes, we did. We had our first one a year later, and we've got three kids at the moment, and the oldest just turned 9 last week.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
And you provide for them?
Yes, I do. We call it, was it single income is what it's called, but the traditional, the conservative way of providing for family is I do my best to earn all of the money, or at least most of it, and my wife focuses very much on the household, on raising the children, on, you know, making sure that they become very conservative adults when the time comes, which happens a lot faster than you think. And you know, she does a really, really good job with all of that, and I'm so very thankful for that. She's actually overseas this week, helping my sister who's moving house in Australia with her family. And I realized just how much my wife does being alone for a week, and how much I'm struggling just to, you know, look after the kids and keep the house in order. And it's a massive amount of work that goes into that.
Do your children go to a Christian school?
Yes, they also go to the school that my wife and I met each other at, Tyndale Park Christian School. We still live in the area and close to our parents as well. So her parents are nearby, and my parents are right with us as well. So we have, you know, good, I think that's a good part of conservatism, living a conservative life. So try and live with your family and have them nearby and support each other. And I think that makes a big difference as well. When it's possible for people to do that, it's a wonderful thing.
Growing up, did you ever feel stultified in the sense that, you know, you're living in a vegan family and all you want to do is try bacon just the once? Did you grow up thinking, no, I think we're living a great life, but I wouldn't mind going out and partying once or twice just to see what it's like?
I think, at least in my case, I wasn't too sheltered from what that looked like. And I think I knew enough about people who did that and was well enough aware of you know, how that kind of life went. And it definitely wasn't something that I found appealing at all. I know people who did, who went that way as well. But I only ever saw those people as, I guess, cautionary tales and warnings, because they always ended up in very unhappy situations from what I saw. So, and I think the Bible speaks a lot to that, about, you know, seeking the pleasures of sin for a season, but in the end, there's nothing but ruin and destruction.
It's a funny thing, because people listening, everyone will think, what a wonderful young man, what a wonderful outlook, what a wonderful way to live your life, and see it as the ideal in many ways. I'll come to your wife in a minute. But I wonder now if it can be achieved without a belief in God, without knowing that God's true and real, in the sense that try as you might to live like you do, without God, would you be rudderless?
I think so. And I actually wrote an article published on the BFD and on Right Minds NZ quite recently called Tradition is Not an Ideology. And I was writing about the experience of a woman who many people listening will be familiar with, Lauren Southern, who tried to visit New Zealand a number of years ago. And she got married and had a child, and then ended up basically leaving, saying she was in an abusive relationship, and she was living in Australia at the time. She moved back to Canada to her family, and she's been speaking out about how negative her experience has been. And a big part of that, I think, was, as I say, you can't, the term we use is LARPing, live action role playing. You can't play pretend conservatism, really. You can't live in a traditional way, completely disconnected from all of these things that people used to have. So, yeah, I think that without God and without a real belief and commitment to a traditional, or what I would call normal, way of life, it's not really possible. You can't fake it.
And you don't have the railway tracks for the tough times.
No, that's a good analogy as well. I remember, a sermon from a minister who used that example as a train. Like, we're like a train on the tracks, and people say, oh, you just want to be free. You know, the train needs to be freed, but if you put the train in a paddock, you know, then the train is free. But where's the train going to go without the tracks? Yeah. So I like that analogy of having the railway tracks.
That. Yeah, I'm cleverer than I thought. Your wife, she lives a life opposite of feminism.
You could say that, yeah.
She was like my mum. And my mum ruled the roost, right? But she was a traditional wife. And they had, like you, Liv, very clear roles, my mum and dad. Housewife, provider. My mum would look at you sideways if you suggested that she was under the thumb. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But that's the way it's presented to men and women these days, that if you're a woman staying at home being a traditional housewife, you're under the thumb.
No, that's definitely not the case. She has complete reign of the house and, of course, as much freedom and resources as she needs to fulfill her role and to do her task. And, there is a in a sense, a soft hierarchy in marriage, but at the same time, there is actually quite a large measure of, I don't want to use the word equality, but kind of that you're cooperating, you're working together.
One flesh.
You're a team. Yeah.
One flesh.
Absolutely.
Isn't that a great phrase? One flesh.
Yeah, it's a wonderful phrase. Yeah. And it's an attitude to your entire life. I think that's something I do try to give that encouragement to people as well when they get married, to treat everything that they have as the same. You know, all that you have, it belongs to both of you, and you do this together as if you are working together as one being, as one flesh.
Before I was a Christian, I regarded marriage as an agreement, a very important agreement. And I regarded children as clever little mammals. True. Overnight, you become a Christian, and both become sacred. And everything with that one view changes.
Yes, our sacred purpose and duty, and it's a sacred bond between husband and wife, and that's we should view it as the bond between Christ and His Church, as a similar kind of bond in that way, that the way we're united as a family is the way we're united to Christ and to our brothers and sisters in Christ as well.
And you subjugate yourself in a very real way, but become such a better person in the process. I've noticed this. It's astonishing to me. So I no longer live for myself. Because if you're an atheist, there's only one person to live for. You become a Christian and a conservative. No. You have these responsibilities and these duties and this sacred obligation. But in seeing that, you grow taller, braver, better, happier, contented, because you take an extra pleasure and joy and contentment in others. And you come second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth.
That's right. Yeah. We must become a last, as it were. We must put all these other people before us. But it's a duty of servitude almost, right?
And yes.
We're servants now.
Yes. Yeah. Now, I mean, it's hard to explain.
I know that at least some atheists, especially of the Nietzschean variety, kind of view that very negatively, right? It says the Christianity, they call it a slave morality. But we take that as a very serious thing, that we are the servants, we are the slaves of a great God who we serve.
Yes.
And we do all that we do to His honor and to His glory if we do things as best as we can.
And of course, Ayn Rand, the great libertarian writer, who escaped communist Soviet Union, was an adamant atheist and influenced a whole lot of libertarian thinkers that they couldn't be free if they didn't clear their heads from the superstition. But she herself became tyrannical.
Yeah, that's right.
And of course, that's what happens. Tell me then about politics, because first of all, in society, you must live almost like a little minority in your life, in an island surrounded by this ocean of liberalism. What would you call it? What are the non-conservatives?
It feels a little bit like that. Yes, I would refer to non-conservatives as liberals. I think that's the best the best way to describe the two groups. But it doesn't really feel like an island because you're connected with all of these other families who also live like you do. So you're not just alone. It's not just you against the world. It's you and all these other families, all these other little islands together, as it were.
And making a community.
And it really is a community-oriented way of living and thinking, not in a socialist or communist way, but in a Christian way.
Mm. You must be appalled, like I am, by Christopher Luxon.
Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, I think he is, as I expected, it's hard to be, how do you say, it's hard to be disappointed, I guess, if someone's behaving as you expect them to behave. But that's, I was not a fan of him from the moment he took over. I think he, in fact, his maiden speech, from his very maiden speech in Parliament, when he spoke about what he thought faith was and religion was, I said to myself, this is not it. He's wrong. He's saying that, he said, I believe, but it doesn't affect anything that I do. And I said, that's what he said.
Did
in
he
his
say
maiden
that?
Speech. Yeah, effectively, he said that his faith was personal and private and wasn't going to affect anything that he did in public. And I thought that's insane. That's not Christianity. I don't know what religion that is, but that's not Christianity. You can't say that it doesn't affect anything you do in your public life.
And of course, it's a very easy thing to handle as a politician, because obviously he doesn't want to upset great swathes of voters, but he can say, look, I am a Christian. I live Christian values. I follow Christian values and I'll vote accordingly. But I'm only one vote.
And that's what an honest, true believing man would say.
And that's what Bill English did his whole political career.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are plenty of people in Parliament who have and who do that exactly. But no, he's very openly said that he is not going to let Christianity, supposedly that he believes, influence his decisions in public. So that just tells you that he doesn't really believe, that's all.
He broke me on that. and him saying about, if you're worried about toilets, you're on another planet. That's when he and I departed company, because if you've got young daughters and they're going into the toilet and there's a man in a frock and a beard coming out, that changes you.
Well, absolutely. Any man with daughters would say that, yeah. But except for the ones that have been completely captured, ideologically corrupted, and they say, no, that doesn't affect me. They sort of be willing to sacrifice even their own children to this ideology.
It is child sacrifice, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
We've run out of time, Dewa.
I know. We've only just begun. We'll have to do this again sometime.
We will. Well, you've got a show. I've got a show. We could make it happen. Can I congratulate you for living... working hard to live a very good life and to raise good children.
Well, thank you very much.
And to inspire us, because when we look out on the world, we worry. And to see good people, good fathers, good mothers, like your mum and dad, and you, it's amazing. It's wonderful. It's uplifting.
Well, thank you very much. And I'll give you some encouragement as well and all those others like you, because you were instrumental in my life as well and in my political formation when I was a teenager, and you were the leader of the ACT Party. In every little way, all these people that you meet in your life, if you're a good example to others, there are others who are watching, there are others who are learning, and you will shape the world in a much more positive way. And so I encourage
particularly young kids, Young kids are watching. Dewa, now tell us your show again, Friday, 1 o'clock, and it's called
The Dialogue.
And wonderful. What would you say its thesis is?
We focus a lot on history, New Zealand history in particular, and European history and culture as well. I try and educate people on that. And I focus interviews on patriotic and nationalist movements around the world as much as I can. So I try and have guests on every other week on international issues and sort of conservative and
just like TV1,
just like the complete opposite of TV1. Yeah, yeah. And I get a lot of wonderful feedback from people who appreciate it and who learn things. I do everything that I do on that show is I make sure that I learn something every show that I put together. So I'm able just to share that with people. So I'm learning, and hopefully if you're listening to the show, then you'll be learning as well.
You're great. There we go. Diwa and his show. Wonderful. 1 o'clock at Fridays. You're on Rally Check Radio. What a wonderful young man. We are truly blessed with our hosts, with our guests, with our listeners. And Diwa, what a guy.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.